We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Hi, this is Kay Ballard, and I have a question for you. What would you do if someone told you that they wanted to bring you on the radio and ask you the world's 200 dumbest questions? Would you run the other way? Well, today's guest, the fabulous Laurie Foley, didn't. Do you think it might be because she has her PhD? Let's just pause for a moment and speculate on that. Well, even though she has a PhD, I refuse to call her Dr. Laurie because she might become confused and think that she is Dr. Laura and start lecturing me on clean living, something that I am totally unprepared to do. Laurie is a very successful marketing coach living in Atlanta, Georgia, with particular expertise in personal branding, blogging, and email. And she admits to having scary technical skills. That's scary in a good way. Not scary like my technical skills, even though I'm constantly telling myself that I'm a geek. So here's what I want to do. You know the questions I have to ask Laurie. I have to ask her about whether or not she is using her appearance on Women Are Not Funny as a stepping stone to something better. Laurie, are you?
Gosh, that was not the question I was expecting, Kay. I mean, who doesn't want a show on Oprah's new network, you know? So, why not?
Well,
let's be a stepping stone.
I'm glad you admit it. Because that helps me in knowing how to conduct the interview. But here is another question I have to answer. And given the answer to the first question, I'm a little bit worried.
Uh-oh.
And I already was. Are you here essentially auditioning to take over my show? And the reason I ask this is, as you know, Kamala Spearley is the executive producer of the show. And the first time he met you, he came back to me telling me he loved your voice. Now, I did not like that at all, because in my opinion, he was only supposed to love my voice. But it occurs to me that I'm in triple jeopardy since you are possibly trying to take over my show.
Well, you know, I tried with Kamal, and we know how that turned out. It really didn't work. He stayed with you. So I think that's your answer, Kay. I think your show is safe because, you know, I tried with Kamal, and I bow. So, you know.
Oh, I love hearing that. That's lovely. Okay, so Laurie.
I can always say I bow and that makes you happy.
I love it. So, Laurie, I was wondering, are women funny?
You know, that was the hardest part of me saying yes to doing this thing with you, Kay, honestly, is the name of your show, Women Are Not Funny. Because actually, I really think the funniest people I know, with the exception of babies who laugh, are women. Most of the women I know are very funny, so, you know.
Well, I think you are substantial proof of that. When we first became acquainted, it's one of the reasons I was so drawn to you. You were very funny. And just now on Twitter, you made this hilarious little joke, please, God, don't let me be funny.
I don't want to wreck your show. I mean, I'm really committed to not wrecking your show.
You could ruin our reputation. True. I mean, people could tune in. They would be confused. They'd go, but she's funny. I thought I was listening to Women Are Not Funny, and she's funny. That would be horrible.
So, you know,
try to keep it in check.
Okay. I'm working on it.
So, you know, one of the things that I have been advised by the various radio experts that I've turned to, you know, to kind of add a little gloss and improvement to what I have going here. They've said, Kay, your show should be relevant. Well, I have a problem with that. You know, that's not me. Then they also
relevant
say,
to what? that would be my first question.
Relevant to people. People should find it relevant. They've also told me, Laurie, that people want to hear in the first few seconds of the show something that they're going to gain of value. You know, that apparently there are people who are not interested in spending an hour just listening to pointless drivel. This is what they tell me. You know.
But I have the perfect thing. I have the perfect thing for them. When you go to the doctor's office and you have to, like, they have to draw a little bit of blood, what do most people do? They give them the hand that they write with. So the most useful thing I can tell people is give them the hand that you don't write with and let them draw blood from that hand.
That was a tip, so people.
There's
that
nothing less
takeaway.
Funny than drawing blood or going to the doctor's office. So we're sticking with the theme of the show, and they've got something useful.
Yeah, well, that's true. And also, with Halloween coming up, you know, and Laurie, from what I understand, vampires are big now in our culture. You know, vampires, people. I don't understand it either, but,
well,
you know.
It's about sex, you know.
Yeah, okay. You don't think it's about blood?
No.
I think it's about blood and sex. But, you know, I just kind of stay away from that crap. It doesn't.
I think it's about sex.
Okay. I'm suddenly more interested. I think I'll tune in. Okay. What I failed to do at the opening of the show is tell people what we're going to talk about today. I mean, I tell them that I'm committed to asking you the 200 dumbest questions, and I can come through on that. I mean, I'm not only committed to it, I have the talent.
I'm ready.
Have the ability.
And I Google fast. I'm ready.
Well, what we're going to talk about, though, today are three things that you have a lot of expertise at. One, of course, is personal branding, but we're not going to start there. One is blogging, and one is email. Those are kind of huge areas of expertise that you have stepped forward and told people, hey, I can help you with this. So, you know, one of the things that I know about your situation is you are on the verge of a product launch, which is pretty exciting. You're going to be offering a course on blogging. It's directed at coaches, but it's kind of general in a lot of ways. I think almost anyone who needs a sort of help could find it useful. But one of the things that you don't seem to know, and I don't understand this, you with your PhD, because, you know, my thought is if you have a PhD, you're supposed to know damn near everything. Would you agree with that?
You know, we could do a whole hour on the particular value or lack of value of that kind of degree. But the best thing anybody ever told me about that was Michelle Woodward, who I know is also your friend. And she said, that is one old, stale degree.
Darling, it's the people, it's dummies like Michelle who don't have one who say that sort of thing, you know.
She convinced me to shed the albatross that, you know, that had become. Mm-hmm. So it was very wise when she said that, yeah.
Yeah, jealousy, I'll have to talk to her about that. So anyway, if you are selling a course mm-hmm. about blogging, everyone knows that what your course is supposed to be about is how to earn six figures from blogging. That's what it's supposed to be about. And apparently that's not what yours is about. So what's the deal
and
there?
It's really not. You know, I mean, there are so many people that will try to get your money to tell you how to make money on a blog, but that's not what this class is about. This class is about how to keep it up. And it comes from my own heartbreak, Kay, and I know that you and I understand heartbreak. My own heartbreak is when I see blogs that get started and then they get abandoned. And I just feel so bad when that happens
to
people.
Little tears come to mind. Little tears
they
come
do.
To
mind. Little glistening tears. And it's just so sad because I know that every blog out there was started with good intentions. And, you know, there are times when people try it and they don't like it. You know, shut it down, people. Take it off, you know. But leaving it up there as an unloved blog, that's the thing that's so sad. And ultimately, when people are in business for themselves, it really hurts their credibility. And so that's really what motivated me to start the class.
Well, you know, when I read your sales page and you mentioned that, suddenly it just made perfect sense to me because, yes, when I go to a blog, someone who is in business and they haven't written a post for 2 months, let's say,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's not even clearly an abandoned blog, but it's just kind of abandoned.
Yeah, neglected.
It doesn't It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you just think, are they, I mean, and we all know who's kind of a solo business, and it's really challenging when you're a solo business to keep your credibility, and I mean, it's not that challenging. You just kind of keep doing the good stuff that you know how to do, but it's so easy when everybody is being told you should have a blog, you should have a blog, and I don't think it's for everybody. I mean, I really, really don't, but if you've tried it and you like the benefit that it could give you, then this class is really about making it easier to sustain that. And what people are telling me who are signing up for it is they love the idea of some accountability. So I'm asking people to commit to do it for 6 weeks and see how it feels to have that commitment, and then they can decide, do they want to keep going or not? And they'll have a gazillion tools to make it easier every time they sit down with the, you know, create the post screen in front of them.
Well, it is a great idea, and I'll tell everyone what you are talking about when you say accountability. You're actually requiring the people who take your class to write 6 posts, one
yep.
a week.
One a week.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's rather brilliant. But the name of your course is Blog More, Stress Less.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered when I read that if you market tested it that or tested that title. Did you test it up against Stress More, Blog Less?
Gosh. You know, I probably should have tested it, but I didn't. I actually had some really terrible titles before that. And I have like a museum of bad class titles. I could populate bookcases with it, but, you know,
that's a great museum. That's a great idea. I like that idea. But Blog More, Stress Less. And, you know, I have as a question for you, and you've really answered it, but I want to go back to it. Should everyone have a blog? Because as you know, as we all know, the, you know, that phrase is touted out so frequently. Everyone should have a blog. Everyone.
Well,
you agree with that?
You know, as I've gotten to be a woman of a certain age, any sentence that comes with the word should in it is highly suspect to me. So just on principle, I would say that's not true. I don't think everybody should do anything. But it's really clear to me in the area of blogging that it's just, you know, not something that everybody wants us to sustain. It's not something that everybody feels comfortable doing. I think it's really normal for people to feel kind of nervous when they get started or to need to get their legs under them. And I was, you know, very uncomfortable and insecure when I started blogging. I just was stubborn. You know, I just made myself keep doing it. But it was really this year in January when I decided to commit to a weekly post no matter what, that it became much more fun. And I am so not a disciplined person. This is really what I'm going to work on the second half of my life, is being more disciplined. But finding that discipline around writing has been one of the best gifts I've ever given to myself. I really enjoy it. You know, not every week is, you know, a great post by any stretch. Some weeks are stronger than others, but I feel really good knowing that it's time I'm going to make for myself and for my creativity and for, you know, the people that are interested in the kind of things that I like writing about. So it feels good.
Yeah, and I do love your blog. One of the things that, and you do know, of course, that the whole point of the show is to give me an opportunity and a platform to talk about myself publicly.
Ideally, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So one thing is my blog is now published on Kindle, and that has been a real incentive for me to crank out posts, because I feel like since I have paid subscribers that I have an obligation to actually post, you know, so that's one thing. It kind of guilts me. But the other thing that you may not be aware of, and I have blogged about this, is that I blogged, you know, kind of early on in the history of blogging, and I had some blogger blogs, and a lot of them. And I didn't, at the time, it was so funny, I did not want an audience. I mean, I really didn't, and I told myself, I think it just made me feel icked out, the whole idea that people I didn't even know could read what I was writing. But what I liked about it was I just thought the templates were pretty. I like seeing fonts on the page, you know. And so I had a whole bunch of blogs, and they're still out there. And you know, it's been really, and so I did abandon them. They're orphan mm-hmm. blogs. They are totally mm-hmm. orphan blogs, and they do come up in search. And so I had never really been too concerned about that until I read your sales page, because I thought, if someone finds that mm-hmm. instead of what I'm doing now, they will think I'm not serious.
Right.
But I did these crazy blogs. That may, you know, I'm sure that surprises you. I had one blog called, it was just right after my divorce, and so I had a blog called Can't Marry Me. And what I did was every day, not every day, but a lot of days, I would do a post by someone about someone in the obit of the New York Times. And the point was, he was someone that I could have married but for the fact that he was dead, right? And so then I would link it to the obit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this was just really crazy. And I had one called Jummy Speaks. And he was just a weirdo, you know, and he made he was actually very conservative, and he made comments on I was just, you know, inhaling the New York Times at the time. So he would make comments on a top news story in his own political fashion, and he was ungrammatical, and it had a drawing of him on every post. So I had a lot of fun with that, and then I had several others that I won't go into, and they're still out there. And one of the funny things is, okay, so I wasn't looking for an audience. I was just doing this for my own entertainment. It's almost like they were art projects, you know. I was just trying, they were demonstration projects or something. So after I got on Twitter, this woman followed me and then told me, oh, yeah, I remember you back from your nutty blog, Can't Marry Me.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
It just totally weirded me out. I'm going, oh, my God, I actually had readers, you know. And the fact is, I adore her because she read that blog and she followed me anyway instead of running the other way. But I just wonder, after reading your post, if I don't need to pull those things down. You know, I have blogged about abandoned blogs and revealed the fact that I had these and linked to them, you know, on my blog. And I also, the main reason I did it was for an opportunity to criticize my dear friend, the very darling Daniel Thurston in New Zealand, it's morning on Saturday there. He may actually be listening at the moment. So I the reason I wrote that post, Laurie, was to take a pot shot at him.
That's so funny.
Is
you know, but you're raising a really good point, which is, you know, when should one come down? But if you have a body of work like that that stands on its own, I don't think that has to come down. I think it's just kind of nice to put an end post on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, here's where you can find me now, I've moved, whatever. Because when one just stops in the middle, sometimes I think, did the person die? Have they gone on to the great blog in the sky? You know, what happened to them?
That is a very good point, and it's making me feel a little better, because I did that on Jummy Speaks and on Can't Marry Me,
mm-hmm.
both. I said, you know, I did this kind of as a demonstration project,
yeah.
you know, and it's kind of done, so goodbye.
Yeah.
But I'll go back and do that and point them to my new blog, which is New Media Martini, and the reason I named it that, can you guess?
Love of Martini.
Yeah, I wanted to attract alcoholics.
I like the title. I love the title. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, Laurie, wouldn't you agree with this? There are so many clever titles. I mean, just virtually everyone has a blog. It's just amazing how much creativity and that you find on blogs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I'm blown away constantly.
Well, and particularly when you really dig into a certain niche, like, you know, I'm a knitter, and in the world of knitting blogs, you wouldn't think there would be a lot of entertainment in the world of knitting blogs, but some of those are hilarious, and the names are great, and, you know, they're just endlessly entertaining, and occasionally you find a good pattern.
No, the fact of the matter is those blogs are extremely popular, too, aren't they?
Very, very popular. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, so here's another question for you about that. Have you considered being a knitting coach?
I have.
Okay.
It's funny you say that, I actually pitched a class to my local yarn shop one time when I was thinking about doing more life coaching than business coaching, and it was going to be called Knit One, Purpose Two. And it was going to be kind of a, you know, life coaching blended with knitting, and every week we were going to knit a talisman object, and it was going to be representative of some part of your life you were working on, and, you know, it just sounded so altruistic and ultimately not me, so it didn't happen.
Well, you know what, though? That sounds very clever.
Could have been fun.
Mm-hmm. Laurie, I do not knit, okay? And, you know, I think it's probably the one thing that stands in the way of my perfection, because I just don't knit. But I do have a helpful hint for listeners related to knitting. If you would like to pose as a knitter, it's very easy to do and a very cool thing. I'd highly recommend it because people will admire you for being a knitter, I believe. I think it's very admirable to be a knitter. All you have to do is buy a skein of yarn. I'd say go with some good-looking yarn. And I'd also say go with some yarn that has a bit of bulk to it. And then buy two big knitting needles. And they'll be big enough that they'll have to stick out of your tote bag or computer case or whatever. And put your knitting needles and put your ball of yarn in a very prominent place. And people will assume that you're a knitter. It's kind of being a fake knitter. Do you approve of that, Lauren?
Totally do not approve of that, Kay Ballard.
Okay, so it's a little bit black hat.
It's black hat knitting. That's exactly what it is.
It is black hat knitting.
You know
knitting.
What? Here's the reason I don't approve of it, because knitters are everywhere. You would be so busted. You would be shocked.
Really?
They're everywhere. Oh, yeah.
We are legion.
We are
darling,
legion.
Darling, but listen. What if you are able to use weasel words? Remember, I'm a lawyer.
True. Well,
I'm just saying.
You could talk about, you know, that great heel you turned or the piece that you steeked or, you know, I mean, I could give you some weasel words if you wanted to.
Yeah,
those,
you could help me a little bit with the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
And also, then I could, on occasion, wear a hand-knit sweater, you know.
Okay.
While we're dealing with a knitter, let me just ask you this. This does require some professional expertise. A couple of weeks ago when Michelle McCormick was our guest, I told her about a page in the September Vogue where a woman was wearing a long tunic shaker sweater with a silk brocade skirt. And Vogue referred to it as a witty combination, and I love that. You know, the whole idea that you could just throw two strange pieces together and people would consider it witty instead of just kind of tragically tacky. And so Michelle asked me, what is a shaker knit?
I don't know that either. I'm so curious.
Oh, you don't?
No,
oh,
I'm
going
to learn.
Oh, my goodness. So I would know. Well, what I was going to say is, you know, this is what I told her. Did I get it right? But you're just no use at all.
I'm sorry.
I think it's time we have that drink.
I'm a failed guest.
You are a failed guest. You're a totally failed guest. Listen, we have, you know, I think it's almost 5 o'clock on the East Coast, so I think it's time that we have a glass of wine. And our featured musical group today is a steel drum band called Caiso. Caiso, and they are really terrific. They are in the Washington, D.C. area and do a lot of live performances there. And they're on Twitter as well. And so we're going to have a glass of red, red wine. Well, Laurie, I know you're a big fan of music because one of the things that I learned about you in preparing for the show is that all of your programs have their own theme song, and that the theme song for Blog More Stress Less is Bring the Funk by Parliament.
I love that song. I love that song. And I think that's what people need for their blogging. They have to find their funk. They have to find it and bring it. And there's nothing more inspiring to me than a good funk song.
Well, it's an inspiring song. And you certainly notice that Parliament is extremely fashionable. And they have me to thank for that because I was their stylist back in the day.
Wow.
And those boots you loved, you know, I came up with those. So
making a statement.
Here is a question. You know, someone that we both read from time to time brought up this point, that new blogs are started every day and that there are new readers for blogs every day. But for the most part, those new readers are added to the already popular blogs because they hear about them and that's where they gravitate to, the popular knitting blogs that you were mentioning. So my question is, how does one get an audience? Would it be possible, in your opinion, for someone, a dedicated knitter or even a black hat wannabe knitter, to start a knitting blog today and have some possibility of building a reasonable audience or even a decent-sized audience? How would that happen? Could it be done?
Absolutely. You know, and everybody who has that big audience now started as somebody with a small audience. And I think we kind of discount traditional methods of getting the word out. And so I think it all sort of ties back into, why are you blogging? You know, why are you doing it? And this is where I kind of take issue with some of the, you know, make six figures online, because a lot of those people just tell you to go out and hunt down the AdWords that are underserved and start something on any old topic. But, you know, it's not always the topic that you're passionate about. But I think if you pick something that you really care about and you care about the people who are likely to read about it, then that energy comes through in what you write. And that is an attractive force on its own, if I can get kind of woo-woo for a second about it. But at the same time, it makes it really easy to tell people what you're doing. So, you know, when you're hanging out with the people you normally hang out with, your book group or, you know, whoever, your group that gets together after work occasionally or something, then, you know, you can mention it or it can come up or it can go in your email signature. So there's some, you know, kind of good old-fashioned word of mouth that happens. But then the other big place that I see people building audiences pretty quickly is exactly how I met you, on social media. And frankly, Kay, the reason that I thought, oh, Kay and I are going to be friends is when I read the link on your profile on Twitter and it was that lemon pie recipe. I thought, this is hilarious. And partly I thought it was hilarious because you were sending me to something that wasn't your blog, where you weren't selling something. It was just so unexpected. So I think that's another way to kind of draw that audience in is just, you know, there's a great book on branding called Zag, you know, and he talks about where everybody zigs, you zag.
Right.
And so that's the trick, you know, where's your zag? Where are you different? Where are you fresh? Where are you engaged? You know, what? How are you sticky? What's your hook? All those kind of things that we've heard before, but they work. And,
well,
and the thing that doesn't work is copycat. I mean, that's kind of my last.
And there is a lot of copycat out there, but
a
I just have
copycat.
To say, that pie, you know, it truly, in addition to being a zag, it is a man-pleasing pie, and you have two very important men in your life, so, you know, I highly, highly recommend that man-pleasing pie, and it's now a feature on my blog. But, you know, one of the things about my blog is, I love my blog. My blog is darling, but it, you know, it mainly exists to be silly and to torture the English language. And so it's a little hard, you know, what you were saying about people ask you what, you know, what's your blog about. And, you know, I just come up with crap like, ugh, I don't know, or perplexity is king, or you know, that, you know,
obfuscation.
That kind of, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, one of the things I do that, you know, to me is just a totally inside joke and no one would find it funny at all, but when you take the bar exam, and I've taken two of them, not because I flunked, but I've taken them in two states, and part of the bar exam is the multi-state, multiple choice exam. And if you're someone who does well at standardized tests, you think, oh, multiple choice exams, great, no problem. But the way that thing is designed, they have four answers, and none of them are exactly right. So what you're trying to do is select the answer that is the least wrong out of
the four.
Well,
sounds like my life.
That's a wonderful point. I never really thought of that. Oh, man, you are a good coach. So what I do in New Media Martini is I try to use words and almost get it right. So I use words that are, you know, kind of rich with meaning, and they are almost used to say what you might think. So, a lot of zagging going on, that's the bottom line. But, you know, let's move on really quickly to email, because you are an expert at that, and it's such a big part of our life.
Oh, man.
Isn't it?
It is taking over our lives. I'm about halfway through reading Hamlet's Blackberry right now, and it's fascinating because he talks about, you know, why are we so plugged in? But and I really highly recommend the book because he also talks about sort of the great thinkers, the great philosophers, and how they handled the new technologies that overwhelmed them at the time. So it's really interesting. But I have one kind of magic thought about email, and I learned this from Mark Hurst, and I love his work on email too. He runs a company called Good Experience. It's about experience design in web design, and he also has a great blog, speaking of good blogs. But he helped me learn that email is not a to-do list. And if I were going to urge people to change one thing about their email behavior, that's the one thing. Figure out a to-do system that works for you, because when I think about, and when I see this in other people, what overwhelms them with email, it's not just the bulk of it that comes in, because there are lots of ways to filter it and, you know, make the bulk more manageable, but it's using that email as a reminder and as a way of trying to keep track of what we're supposed to be doing and who we're supposed to be replying to, and it does not work well for that. So that's I'm fascinated by various tools that come out that let you try to manage it all electronically, but honest to goodness, Kay, mine's a notebook. Mine has come down to a notebook where when something important comes in, it has to go in that notebook, because that stream of email, it's like a waterfall. It never stops. It just keeps coming at you. So if you think you're going to leave something in email and you're going to find it later and remember to do it, most people I know, that's not the case. So
yeah, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you,
yeah.
I know Mark Hurst in that social media sort of way,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things, and I did buy his book, you know, his mm-hmm. book is several years old now, I bought it immediately. But,
right, Bit Literacy, it's excellent.
Yeah, it is excellent, and the thing that is striking to me about Mark Hurst, the reason I feel like I know him is because years ago, and I think it was back when I was doing that initial blogging, I signed on to his list, and he came back to me like, who are you? I want to know who you are.
I know.
You know,
he's amazing.
He is amazing, and people don't do that.
I know.
You know?
I mean,
they do. They just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started doing it some because I, you know, I actually it played right into my own self-absorption. You know, even though I'm quite accustomed to people wanting to know me, I was very flattered because the person stepped out from behind the list.
Right.
And said, you are someone I would like to at least know who you are, to know whether there's a possible relationship that could happen. And so I've been impressed by that ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he still does that, and I've never attended a GEL conference. Have you?
I have not, but I would love to. I mean, I just think, you know, Mark is one of those people who's, and I've never met him. I've had a little bit of personal email with him, too, like you're describing, but
mm-hmm.
He strikes me as somebody who is just of, he's so principled and he's so focused and, you know, he's very old school, you know, not old school in terms of not changing with the times, because I think he really does, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't hang his flag whichever way the wind blows. And I like that in people. I like people that know what they stand for, and he does.
Yeah, and we're going to have to make certain that he listens to the recording of the show. Because we've given him a lot of real estate and a lot of well-deserved compliments.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Here is, and given that, he probably will want to hire both of us as keynote speakers for the next jail. That's what I'm thinking.
Let's hope. I would. Yeah. That would be a thrill. I would love that.
He has great speakers, and he puts a lot of them, you know, in fact, some of, I listened to one the other night that the TED Talk sent to me, you know, from his conference, but it was part of the TED Talks portfolio. So, you know, and you know this very well from being the victim of them, my own emails are kind of like Russian novels, and that's what I call them. And I know that, you know, like Russian novels, they are lengthy, and they cause a lot of crying. I mean, people tear up when they see an email from me in their inbox because they know, you know, it's just going to be ridiculous. And so I just wonder, we keep hearing that Twitter has brought a little more discipline to our writing and that we are less inclined to write long things. Do you think that's true?
I think it needs to be true in email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have to, I'm one of those people when I see the really long email, I think, okay, can I get back to this later? Do I really have time to dig into this now? You know, it presents a challenge. So I really encourage people to break things down into one topic per message. So if you're part of a committee and or you know, I do consulting with a nonprofit and they're involved in a lot of projects with them, I try very hard not to send email catching up on five things at one time, but even to fire those off into five separate messages. And at first that sounds like, oh, Laurie, you're just making people's email problem worse, but giving it in those little chunks and bite-sized bits of information makes it much easier for people to keep up with those threads of topics and to just find out what they need to know at the right time. And that, you know, that's really part of the problem for people, too, is keeping track of it once it's come in.
It is. And, you know, I've in our company, we've experimented with quite a few different project management systems,
mm-hmm.
and those are tough too. And
oh,
you know, they
I'm
end
in
up
in the middle of that.
Getting,
tell me if you find one you like.
Well, we'll have to talk about that. But one of the things that you know, I know what I've tried. I do think the paid are definitely better than any of the free ones that I've looked at. But one of the things, I just have a few rapid fire questions for you that I want to get in. So do you think everyone should have a stalker account? I mean, that's what I
guess. What is a stalker account?
Well, you know.
I'm not going to answer that until I know what it is.
Well, I mean, that's my name for it, but just a separate email account that you give to people who you're not sure you want to have them have emails from them appear in your regular account. So it could be from lists
like
that you think might be spammy or that sort of thing. I just call it stalker account,
you know,
because
it's a good idea. I have, again, that discipline
you don't do
thing.
It.
I've been very undisciplined and I haven't done that, and you know, as a result, my spam filter catches a ton. That's an interesting idea. Should everybody have one? You know, it's one more thing to manage. Is it worth it, or I've moved everything to Gmail? That spam filter seems to take care of
that.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are having an email conversation with someone, particularly certain someones,
mm-hmm.
how do you end things? How do you let them know that the conversation is over, and you know, you like if you say goodbye, they have to come back with another goodbye. How do you shorten the string?
I let them have the last word, so I just stop.
Okay, I mean early on. Okay,
yeah, I let them have the last word.
Good advice. Have you noticed that a lot of people think email is real time, that you're supposed to be there at the ready? To answer either that or they assume you've dropped dead.
Yes.
Are you listening to me, Mother? Are you listening to this? I'm talking to my mother.
Right.
Mother, if you do not get an instant reply.
But here's my question back to you, Kay. How often did you give the instant reply? Did you train those people to think that?
Well, see, that brings me to another question. How do you feel about people, you send them an email, maybe it is a business relationship, okay, but they have their email set up, so it automatically triggers a return email that tells you they're so damn busy, they've received your email, but they're so damn busy that, you know, I don't like it either.
I don't like that.
It really annoys me. And so,
you know, and I know that there are people who get so much email, but that's a real issue. And if that's the case, then they're probably making enough money that they need to hire some help. And I'm not opposed to hiring help to help filter email or to help you build better filters for email. Or I thought Chris Brogan did something really genius on his site for a while on his contact page. Everything went into a Google form. And I thought that was a really interesting way of handling it so that it wasn't all coming in as things of equal weight. That's one of the problems with the email. Everything comes in and you don't know what's important and what's not important. And it requires your attention to sort it out. And before you know it, you're just exhausted from all the sorting and you haven't even done any work yet. So I love Gmail's new priority inbox. I think that's a genius thing. I'm using that all the time now. But other tools that can come along, and sometimes that's another person. When I go on vacation, I have an assistant who watches my email, and that lets me relax when I'm on vacation.
You know, I'm having a hard time believing that this conversation isn't scripted, honestly, because that's another one of my serious questions. I have several VAs with different functions, I have to give her a shout out because she'll be doing a transcript of this conversation. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful production assistant for Women Are Not Funny. She manages our social media campaign, and she also does transcripts, and that's Faith Goh, who is a law student in the Philippines. So she's not charged with me email, but I have some others, and, you know, they talk about, quote, doing your email, and I don't know what that means. I mean, how do you work that? Do you give them passwords? Do you keep them from having access to all of your email? Does it have to be someone that is, because some of my emails are personal, quite frankly.
Right.
So how does that work?
That I trust. And it is somebody that trusts, and in a case where I know that there are emails that are coming in that are going to be personal, I might build a filter in advance to filter those things off into a list. Doesn't mean she couldn't go off and look at that list, but I trust her. You know, and these days, I honestly would not put anything in email. This has been said for a long time. If you don't want to see it on the front page of the New York Times, it's not that private. So if it's really, really personal, then maybe you stick that in a separate account or something. I have known people like that, people more of kind of a celebrity nature, kind of like you, Kay. But, you know, they had a top-secret personal account, and then they had, you know, and those people knew when they were going on vacation anyway, and then they had kind of the business account, and you can certainly let an assistant sort through some of that.
That is a good idea, to have a separate account for personal. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing about it, and I agree with you, Gmail's priority email is inbox is fabulous, and it's very easy to use.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was shocked. You just turn it on and it works. It's amazing.
The funny thing is, not really funny, but I have been a fan of Outlook for years, and it got all screwed up. And instead of fixing it, I started using just the plain Gmail interface and decided I like it. And one of the reasons I do like it is because the search is so powerful.
It is,
yeah. So I don't have to sort things like I was doing in Outlook and putting it in separate folders and so forth. I just have to remember some words. So I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. The thing is, I do have some very personal emails in my account. They go back, you know, I don't know what to do to get rid of them, maybe. I mean, I just don't know. One thing I don't like about Gmail, though, and I don't like people who complain, particularly about a free service, but I have an awful time proving to them that I know who I am or that I even exist. Mm-hmm. You know, I seem to be totally unpersuasive in that. And part of the problem is, I think it's less of a problem if you use Gmail, but if your email address is a Gmail account, but you have your domain name as part of it.
Right.
It becomes very, very difficult to find.
You're saying you get trapped by other people's spam filters.
No, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying when I get signed out and I try to sign back in, mm-hmm. and I tell them what my username is, we just go round and round about it. And I would be happy to call them up and explain it to them that I do exist and all of that sort of thing, or even pay them money, but they will not talk to me. You know, they do not make
sure
that
they
easy.
Talk to anybody.
They do not talk. That's what I mean. They will not talk to anyone.
Yeah, getting a live person. I have yet to figure that out because I have a feed burner problem.
One of the things that difficult. I just signed on for that is so great, though, is Google Voice. Do you have any experience with that?
I love Google Voice, yes.
The only thing that I can see that's wrong with it is that they do not play cheesy elevator music while the call is being transferred. That is a little bit of a problem, but I think it's a great free service. And evidently, even though it's still in beta, you do not have to have a beta invite. So anyone listening, if you have the desire to have a separate phone number that will mm-hmm. transfer to all of your different phones, it's just the greatest thing ever.
It is totally amazing.
Free service.
Totally amazing.
It transcribes your voicemail into your email account.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a another cool thing. And you can get a number in any area code. And it's a perfect number, I think, to use on a blog site, don't you, or a web page.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's another thing that's nice is then if you really, want to turn your phones off and, want to be done for the day, you just stop having it forward to wherever you are.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I'm all for people finding ways to not have technology control them. I so often meet people and they're like, oh, I don't want to learn a new thing. And the question I always ask is learning this new thing going to improve my life? Is it going to make it easier? Is it going to make it more complicated? And things like Google Voice, so easy to learn and definitely, an improvement, big time.
Well, Laura, you are a branding specialist, and I think you are fully aware that I have a very strong personal brand.
You do. You really do.
And, it's glamorous, highly ambitious, sophisticated, successful, adorable, and modest.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of my brand, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your brand? Because here's what I will tell you that I think it is, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Extremely likable. You're totally likable. There's something about you that is very, very reassuring. I just get that feeling when I'm reading your blog. You are, there's just something about the tone of it that I find reassuring. And just now what you said is, another aspect that is very clear to me. You come off as extremely sensible. What you just said was so sensible, because I am one of those people who goes around
mm-hmm.
saying, oh, my God, I don't want to learn one more thing. But what you just said, you made a good case for it, and it just made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I close to your brand? What
Gosh,
your
I would
brand?
I would love that if that's how people saw my brand. I think one of the lenses that I bring to the branding, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this for myself, and I love talking to other people about it, is the idea of, who are you on an archetypal level? Like the Jungian archetypes. I mean, who are you? Are you at your core a teacher? Are you at your core a healer? Are you at your core an alchemist? Are you at your core a jester? We were talking about women are not funny. You're a jester. That's part of your archetypal profile, Kay. And gestures are fascinating because they're really about speaking the truth and speaking the truth in situations that might make people uncomfortable. And that's
mm-hmm.
the extraordinary
value.
They're
also silly and they dress badly, darling. So,
Well, okay, we're not going to make you wear the goofy hat, but,
And the argyles.
Yeah, exactly.
I like argyles.
Yeah.
Like argyles.
Yeah.
But
connecting
you...
with that, that's a big piece of it, and kind of knowing... knowing your strengths and knowing who you are at the core. I very much identify with the teacher archetype. I was a teacher for a while. I love opportunities that help people learn that, you know, mentor people into learning something that is, you know, hopefully helpful to them, not just holding forth on something, but hopefully helpful. And that's my comfort zone. And I think helping people find that comfort zone is what I want to get better and better at.
Well, and that is terrific. And I think the fact that it's so authentically you is what makes you so likable. People are drawn to you. They just are. I have noticed this.
It simplifies a lot, you know, and that's very often when I – this always fascinates me. If I see somebody's work online and then I meet them and they feel very different, it's kind of back to what you were saying about copycatting. That's where, you know, everybody feeling pushed into having an online identity has gotten so confusing for so many people. They haven't necessarily done that internal work, or for some reason they feel too vulnerable to show who they really are online. And, man, it just, you can smell it. You can just smell it from any distance. And I feel sad when I see that, when I see somebody that is so, you know, kind and compassionate in person and online, they just feel frozen or stiff. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out ways to help people through that.
Do you find that some people are just, because I hear this expressed a good bit or read it expressed and I don't get it at all,
mm-hmm.
but they're very put off by the whole topic of personal branding. They
yes.
feel like that in
yes.
and of itself is phony, or that it involves phoniness, which of course
right.
it doesn't. And the thing I find most astonishing about it is personal brand is not something that happened when the internet happened. My goodness,
right.
we've always had personal brand.
That's exactly right. And the whole point of it is you have one whether you recognize it or not.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not about, and I want to be really clear on this, my interest in personal branding is not about helping people create some artifice. I think that's where it gets the bad rap, you know,
mm-hmm.
where people are trying to position themselves some way that they're not deep down. My interest in personal branding is helping people find who are they deep down and how can that part come out in a way that is much more effortless than the whole posing thing was. So if people don't come out of working with me on branding thinking a whole lot of things are easier now, my marketing feels easier, my PR feels easier, and, you know, all those pieces, then I haven't done my job very well.
Yeah, well, you use the expression, get out of your own way,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
to talk about that. So explain how people get in their own way.
Well, copycat, you know, is one. They get in their own way by just not being clear. I think they get in their own way by not knowing who they want to serve. You know, when if you're in a service business, I mean, that's kind of, you know, most of my clients fit into that. But if they're really, you know, one day they think they want to, you know, work with, you know, moms who are trying to reenter the workforce, and the next day they want to work with people that have serious illnesses, then they're going to put out, you know, very confused messages. They might have deep expertise in both of those. There might be a way to combine those and find an interesting niche. But when they're very confused about how they want to serve and who they want to serve, that confusion comes out loud and clear. Go ahead.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me is that you bring this into the whole sphere of web design, that
mm-hmm.
you actually, it's crucial that you get who you are and get what your brand truly is prior to going into web design or blog design.
Absolutely.
And that by doing that, you really save a lot of money because you don't make
right.
stupid mistakes.
And that's, you know, it's another of those heartbreaks when people come to me with a site that they're so attached to and they know it's not working for them, but they didn't have the benefit of, lots of designers are very good at this too. Maybe they didn't have the benefit of a designer that knew how to do that excavation type of work. And then they have a hard time letting it go because they've invested in it. But it's like, what is it costing you? You know, what if you did let it go? Do that excavation work, because it's amazing to me that you don't have to spend a ton of money on a website once you know who you are. It can be extremely simple, but your messaging becomes so clear because you're really talking about, you know, taking kind of the DNA, the code of your brand, and then turning it into the visual and the verbal language that represents that deep core part. But it's like anything. I mean, how can you, you know, it's like people, I don't know, it's like trying to build a house with no, you know, no blueprint. It ends up kind of looking mud hut and then another thing hanging off and another thing hanging off. You know, and even if you build something very, very expensive and shiny and fancy, if you're really, you know, a teepee girl, then you're living in the wrong house.
Well, it's so interesting to me that you say that because, you know, I'm just sitting here realizing how I want people to have little cordoned off roles. So when you said that about a web designer being able to bring that out, I probably wouldn't like that. You know, I probably mm-hmm. wouldn't like that kind of exploration coming from the web designer. And you know, I'm crazy about web designers and think they're capable. You know, a good designer is just the biggest gift to both our culture and to individual businesses. I mean, they're wonderful, but it's so interesting to me that you do this work, and as you pointed out, there are all kinds of coaches. So to have a lot of your coaching centered around the whole branding issue is great because I do see its relation to marketing. Here's a question I've had for some time. You know, is a branding consultant soon going to be just a necessary helper, if you will, a necessary professional for everyone who is serious about their business or professional life? You know, just as years ago, we didn't all have personal trainers, we didn't all have executive coaches, and I just wonder if a brand specialist isn't going to, at some point, become part of the necessary bag of tricks for any professional. What do you think about that?
That's a really good question. That is a really good question, Kay. I think it's a good relationship to explore for people who feel like something isn't working, but they're not connecting with people as easily as they want to. I think those people are very, very ripe for this kind of work. And I think also people who are fairly early on in starting a business or who maybe are making a big transition and who want to, you know, create a consistent message and, you know, just not make the mistake of, you know, building the wrong house. So, you know, everybody, no, but people in those two cases, I think, are really ideal candidates for this kind of work.
Well, Laurie, the mark of a wonderful guest is that the hour draws to an end, and I still have hundreds of questions and would love to continue the conversation, but we can't do that because it's now 5 o'clock, and Laurie, I think you've proven the point that our premise is wrong. So people can look at the show notes on the website, and you have to have good eyes or wear your reading glasses, but some of those words are clickable links, and so you can click them and you can find out more about Laurie's course, Blog More, Stress Less, which is coming right up. Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you, Kay. It's been fun. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. You can listen to our replays anytime you please, but it's so much more fun when you're here. So join us again live next Friday afternoon for Women Are Not Funny Radio.